Welcome back to the Sunday Roast. How's it going, guys?
How the hell are ya?
How are your hearts? And of course, as always, of utmost importance, how are your heads? Guys, how are you doing? What a beautiful morning. What a beautiful Sunday morning to be doing a light bit of roasting. Guys, how are you? Thank you so much for all of the support. Very briefly, thank you to everybody for subscribing to the Patreon, patreon.com/MarkMeegan. Thank you so much to everyone who follows me on Instagram and sends me lovely messages and strange messages and foot-related messages at Meegan Mark. And thank you everybody who has bought tickets to the London show so far. There are still some tickets left. If you want to go onto my Instagram, you'll get the Eventbrite link, or go onto chelseatheatre.com, I suppose, and buy tickets directly from them. April the 29th. I would love to see some of you there. Right, so it's been a busy week. Look, it's been a busy week in Ireland. Before we get into the wider subject matter, it has been a busy week, and I feel like it would be remiss for me not to comment on some of the events that have unfolded and transpired throughout the week. The big news is that in Ireland, under new legislation, nightclubs might stay open till 6 a.m, which I suppose, look, is great news for most, for the city, and just culture in general. It's a groundbreaking movement, or a moment, you know. Bad news for the deaf, I suspect. Not great news for the deaf, because according to RTE, that's when most of them watch their fucking news. Why do the people doing sign language only come on at the darkest moments before dawn? I've never understood it. It's so unfair on the deaf. Like, what's the story? Does anybody know? Because I'm assuming most of my commentary here is coming from a place of complete ignorance and willful ignorance, because I could have Googled it prior to recording. However, what's the story with that? Sorry, love. No, I'm going to hit the hay early now. Got to set the alarm for 4 a.m. I want to watch last Tuesday's news and see if my lotto numbers come up. Why do they assume that deaf people or those hard of hearing are somehow the owls of society and only watch TV in the dead of night, in the witching hours? It's the least inclusive thing of all time. And also, surely it's something that could be sorted out like very quickly. Does it cost that much to have an interpreter? Would it cost that much more, I suppose, to have an interpreter do it live on the news every night? Or are we that lacking in decent sign language interpreters in Ireland that it would take them only like 4 or 5 days to translate? What's going on here? Can somebody tell me? If you know the answer, please let me know. But it's certainly something that as taxpayers we should be demanding gets resolved. Could they not just incorporate, could they not just do one like sort of clean of house and go, right, we're going to have sign language on every single programme. Sure, it might cost X amount, but what could it cost? Like, say if you hire a sign language interpreter for the full year, I don't know, to work full, I don't know. Okay, I don't know how this would work, but let's say 100 grand. 100 grand, they've got the budget for that. Surely they could just incorporate this into their regular slate, and, you know, within one day, everybody would be used to it, and it's a brilliant move and inclusion. Now again, I'm assuming I'll probably miss something glaringly obvious with this. So by all means, please message me and educate me and inform me, and I will try to be better. But I need to get to the bottom of this. Because it's such a small thing. It's a seemingly small thing, but probably has massive, massive social ramifications for deaf people. Think about it. Think about it like this, right? Imagine two deaf people going out on a Tinder date, okay? They're going out on a Tinder date. They go to the market bar. They ask each other what they do for a living, a bit of back and forth. They order loads of tapas because people get excited about tapas. And they do that awkward laugh when the waiter comes over and say, oh, I think we've ordered way too much food, lol. Anyways, they finish their meal. It's a balmy August evening. They decide to go for a walk along the canal. The attraction is obvious. They both want to continue on with their night, but neither of them is brave enough to suggest the obvious. So eventually, he says to her, I know. Would you like to come back to mine for a movie? It's the perfect crime, as we all know. It's the perfect crime because you're saying everything without saying anything. Do you want to come back to mine for a movie? I'd love to, she says, and prepares herself to go in for a kiss. Good stuff. I think Die Hard 4 is on RTE2 at 3 a.m. on Christmas Day with sign language. Bastards. The amount of shagging that deaf people are missing out on as a result of the lack of sign language interpreters on RTE is complete madness. So, that was one of the things that happened this week. Please educate me if I'm wrong, by the way. Fresh Sundays, as they say. What else? Oh, yeah, I got a couple of messages. I wanted to talk to you about this. I got a couple of messages on Monday night after doing the Chris Rock podcast to say that one particular person said, I just wanted to say, I think it's a real disappointment to see you posting podcasts about the Oscars. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of innocent Ukrainians are being displaced due to the invasion by Russia. Okay. So let's talk about that for a second. You've messaged Mark Megan. Are you aware? You know, my last podcast was on a Ryanair flight, you know, about a Ryanair flight to Beauvais Airport and the current prices of crème brûlée in the 18th arrondissement. I'm probably most known for saying that people who eat Bourneville chocolate are paedophiles and doing impressions of DJs at teenage discos, unless I've had a stroke recently. And I've actually, you know, just done a series of podcasts, I can't remember, on The Hague or the evolution and eventual collapse of the Romanov dynasty. Why are you messaging me about this? And as well, I don't know if you're aware, I feel like it's such a weird moral flex that some people are doing these days, where they criticize others for talking about something then, you know, something other than the thing they feel like we should all be focusing on. You know that, like, people are able to have more than one thought at the same time. Like, people are able to experience a number of thoughts in one day. If anything, more than one moment, you know? I don't really understand the... Also, I'm not Wilfred Owen, Aoife. I'm a comedian. I'm not some sort of wartime sort of commentator. I'm a comedian. I can't offer anything to this conversation. And furthermore, what have you been doing in your life? I went onto her Instagram, this particular person. She was out dancing, out of disco dancing last weekend. Not till 6 a.m, but she had to get back and watch the news. She's not deaf. But like, she, you know, she was out dancing last week. You didn't see me going up to her in Pygmalion and just sort of taking the Malibu and Coke out of her hand and saying, sorry, you wouldn't just get off the dance floor, would you? Sorry, it's just with everything that's happened in Ukraine, I just don't really feel like, you know? You can't be going up slapping pan au chocolat out of people's hands on the promenade or the seafront because of Ukraine. And just because people are still carrying on with their lives to some extent, you know, does not mean that they don't care. It's bananas. It's a weird, it's just another sort of branch off the fucking ever-growing tree of virtue signaling in this forest of nonsense that we currently inhabit. I'm really happy with that sentence, so I'm going to end this segment there. Hello, is that Aoife? Yes, it is, yes. Aoife, it's Jenny here from the front desk at the Fitzroy Hotel. Oh, yeah, hiya. Yeah, hi, listen, you were booked in there for the afternoon tea for Mother's Day there on, Sunday. Yes, yeah, hi. Yeah, listen, we've decided just to not process your booking and just to cancel that. Really? Excuse me, why? We booked this in months ago. Yeah, we just thought, what with Ukraine, you know, we'd probably cancel that for you. Just, you wouldn't want to be having tea or leaving the house or, you know, with Mother's Day and everything. So we've gone ahead and cancelled that for you now. And we've donated the 160 snids to the Red Cross. Is that okay? Do you know what I mean? Anyway, before we get into the main subject matter again, we just have to comment very briefly on the fact that it was April Fool's Day. It was April Fool's Day on Friday. Some people would sort of say, oh, Mark, you must love April Fool's Day. It gives you an opportunity to act the mick, to take the piss. No, I hate it. April Fool's Day is it's the most cringeworthy day on the calendar, okay? It drives me up the wall, especially when businesses try and do it. It's so cringe. Have you seen all of this on social media whenever, like, oh, brilliant, Power City have pretended there's been a refrigerator heist and their Blanchardstown branch is now low on stock? What a hilarious bunch of troublemakers. What an absolute bunch of mentalists. I must remember to shop there the next time I need a decent dehumidifier, you know? Oh, look, McGowan's Opticians in Ranelagh have put up an Instagram story saying that their branch will be closed for the foreseeable future due to a tragic death in the family. They're at a loss for words at the moment, but will post an update when they gather themselves enough to comment on the matter further. Oh, wait, that was posted on March 16th. Okay, my bad. In that situation, instance, my bad. But generally speaking, it's so cringe the way that companies try and do April Fools. It's never funny. It's never funny. If you really want to, if you actually want to do a proper April Fools, okay, I would respect so much if a company posted a very legitimate looking picture on their Instagram and said something like, our CEO, Damien Byrne, has been suspended from work with immediate notice due to him groping a Deliveroo driver on the front steps of our office yesterday. He was caught on CCTV trying to exchange free content insurance to the Brazilian man named Francisco Santos in exchange for a hefty, hefty blowjob. That would be good. I would appreciate that because I would be a fool and it would be April and it would be an April Fool. Okay? I don't want like a local cafe to put up free coffee forever with a winky face. I don't want comedy from where I get my coffee. April Fools is such a cringeworthy day. And then you see the odd person, guys, I'm pregnant, wah! Excellent. Excellent stuff, Aoife, again. Can't believe you're pregnant, Aoife. What with that? Because that means you've been shagging. And with everything in Ukraine, you know, I just think it's shocking. Nevertheless. So now let's get into it, okay? Let's bloody get into it. During the week on Instagram, I asked some of you to, if you could, send me some of the moments in your life wherein you've been publicly embarrassed or shamed or humiliated and what have you. And I got some interesting ones back. Lots of non-interesting ones. The vast majority revolved around people's trousers being pulled down. So in an effort to not talk about children's trousers being pulled down with their willies flapping in the air, I decided to dig deep and to look internally because people wanted me to share some of my own situations of sadness that sort of still haunt me to this day. Now, the thing is, for me, right, like my early life consisted of such a concentrated series of embarrassments and micro humiliations that it would actually be more difficult for me to recall the brief intervals of calm and serenity right before the next public shaming. So it's very easy for me to select a sort of apple as if it's an anecdote from the tree of shame. One of the sort of most pronounced loudest, if that's the right word, the loudest memories I have in my head involves and includes summer camp. And that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about summer camps. I know I've spoken about Irish college before, but I also want to talk about the more the younger years when you were sort of, I suppose, 8 to 12 and the various summer camps that you had to attend as a kid over the summer months. The reality was, you know, for non-Irish listeners here, we had 3 months. Most of us had 3 months off in the summer as holidays. So the summer months really stretched out in front of you like an eternity. And for me, I like to use that time as an opportunity to change every single aspect of who I was. You know, the sort of break in the scholastic calendar was an opportunity to reinvent yourself and come back to school with a new hairstyle, a fresh outlook on life, and perhaps a shit ton of maturity to impress all the boys that you didn't the year before. I went to an all-boys school. But you know, I gave him my best shot. I was willing to try everything. The amount of bloody summer camps that I went to, music camp, speech and drama camp, acting camp, rugby camp for fuck's sake, sports camp. I went to so many and none of them worked. The most outrageous one of all though, that I still recall, and this memory that I'm about to tell you about is so embarrassing, it genuinely still haunts me, and the frisson of cringe I feel in the back of my neck whenever I remember this. Long story short, I was sent to sailing camp. Sailing camp. Now, just to let you know, for me, when I was 11 years of age, I didn't really fit in with most people, but certainly not the people that went to sailing camp. On the very first day, okay, I made the mistake of wearing one of my Slipknot hoodies, DC skate shoes, and baggy jeans. Now, I thought I looked cool, but in the eyes of the sailing instructors, I had all the charm of a builder's catcall. I was a pariah. I was a freak. I was doomed to be a failure as a sailor from the very first week. The only thing that I had in common, by the way, with the people who went to sailing summer camps was the word camp. And it just went so bad. I mean, look, when you say to somebody sailing camp, you know, I think it evokes quite a cool image. I thought we'd be taking on the high seas, the rolling waves of the Irish coast, perhaps encountering the dirtbags of the ocean, you know, pirates. But no, on the very first day of sailing fucking summer camp, we spent 4 hours learning the art of ropes. That is so boring. Learning how to tie knots. Nothing to do with sailing. Nothing to do with being on the open water. It would have been more crack if I had just stayed at home and put a duvet in a dirty clothes basket and went down the stairs pretending I was in a bobsleigh. Which actually was always legitimately good fun. Going down to Dunleary. To Dunleary Harbour in high June with what can only be described as a smorgasbord of arseholes is the worst possible way to start my coming of age story that summer. I was a little goth, for fuck's sake. I was a chubby little goth. You wouldn't bring Avril Lavigne to a Leinster match. You wouldn't bring Noel Fielding into an SCT rugby changing room. Yet here I was, wearing a life jacket that made me look like a fluorescent goth, taking orders from posh teenagers who have seen one too many episodes of The OC. Bastards. They all hated me. So I just rebelled in, you know, in the best way that I possibly could back in sailing by just being really sort of shy and quiet and being afraid to talk to people. It was horrendous. I remember the first day, and this is the beginning of it. The worst, we're sitting around in sort of like a group, right, with chairs. And what happens next is the following sentence, which, as we all know, is the worst sentence to ever fall on the ears of mankind, deaf or otherwise. We're now going to go around the room and say a few words about ourselves. I've spoken about that before, but I hate it. There is no worse sentence to grace the ears of a human being. Because the thing is, then your heart starts beating. So I start panicking, going, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? You try and start, okay, all I need to do is if I just listen carefully to what everybody else says, I can mimic that. I'll mimic that and then it'll be fine. But the problem is you're too busy internalizing this and catastrophizing it that you can't even hear anything anybody else is saying over the very sound of your own heart beating in your chest. You're lost in a train wreck of thought about how you're going to present yourself to the room. It's terrifying. And the worst thing about this one is they said you have to say your name, you have to say what you like in terms of a hobby, and then you have to like do a gesture, like an action that sort of like to mime the activity that you like to do. So it gets around to me and I go, hi, Mark, and I like to play the guitar. And then I did like a sort of guitar movement, okay? And everybody started laughing. They all started laughing at me, doing the air guitar in front of a bunch of fucking nautical dickheads in Dubarry boots and Helly Hansen hoodies is about as demeaning as it gets. Even the instructor started giggling. Because, do you know why? Because he played the fucking ukulele. Carrying a ukulele around with you, by the way, is arguably the quickest and most effective way of telling the world you're an arsehole and annoying in 2022. The ukulele slung over the back. All the girls fancied this lad because he played 3 chords and sang Jason Mraz songs. Jason Mraz. He wore Hollister denim jeans and flip-flops. I couldn't respect the man. And he knew that. He knew that I saw right through him. So he didn't respect me either. With a seashell necklace and sunburnt nose, the pseudo-exoticism radiated off him like aftershave. And the fact that everybody fell for it, by the way, everyone thought this guy was so cool, that only solidified my sense of isolation even further. And there he is laughing at me for saying I play the guitar. His name was fucking inexplicably American for a guy from Clonsky as well. Something like Corey or Chase or Troy. His real name was probably Piatter. But he changed it on the Bebo every July at the first of the fucking month, so all the girls have flocked to him. Jason Mraz, I'm Yours. Do you know that song? It is, I'm just going to Google the lyrics. It is one of the worst songs ever. And everybody absolutely adored this guy because he'd sing it. And also, that was the only song he sang. It was the only song he sang. He knew 3 chords. Everyone was like, oh, this guy is just so deep. And, you know, that song is so beautiful. Like, imagine the inner peace and the psychological ability to let go and be in the moment that must be required in order to listen to Jason Mraz, I'm Yours, and think that it's profound. Here we are. Well, you done me in, but you bet I felt it. I tried to be chill, but you're so hot that I melted. I fell right through the cracks. Now I'm trying to get back. Before the cool done run out, I'll be giving it my bestest. And nothing's gonna stop me but divine intervention. I reckon it's again my turn to win some or lose some. But I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait. I'm yours. Hey, hey. So anyway, the summer camp goes along and it's not going great. We end up basically not going near the water. We just learn about various types of knots and it's extremely boring. But also I probably wasn't allowed to go near the water anyway because I was a goth. It is interesting. You never see goths like swimming. What do goths do when they're not being goths? Have we discussed that before? Like, does a goth wake up in the morning and just go, yeah. Okay, honey. Yeah, look, I'll be back around 6. I've got a busy day today. I have to go into Temple Bar and sort of loiter around there for a few hours. Then I'm going to get the 17 bus. I'll be sitting on that, I'd say, for about 9 hours, listening to really loud, aggressive music and these huge headphones. But then I'll be back. Like, what do goths do in their spare time? Or is it like a full-time commitment? Nevertheless, the camp went on. Now, in the final week of the camp, there was a talent show. I don't know why there was. It was a sailing course. There was an inexplicable talent show, but I feel like there was at the end of every single summer camp across the country. No matter what you were doing, at the very end, we'll put on a bit of a talent show. Everyone has to do something. Long story short, I was convinced and coerced to get up on stage and play the guitar. I mean, this actually, now that I talk about it, it makes me realise why I am the way that I am. But I had to get up on stage and play the guitar, and I didn't want to. My gut told me not to, but my ego convinced me otherwise. My ego said, well, do you know what, Mark? Every night you go to sleep, you dream about playing to thousands upon thousands of people in Wembley. You know, you read Kerrang! Magazine and sort of listen to interviews with Bowling for Soup and some other American sort of pop rock slash punk band, and this, you think this is what you want to do. So maybe all of these dickheads in their chinos getting dropped off in the SUVs will actually like you. Maybe once you get on stage and you start shredding the guitar, they're going to love you. And you're going to come on stage just after Chase, the instructor, after his 54th rendition of I'm Yours. And everyone's going to go, ah, off the stage, Chase. And they're going to shove his ukulele up his arse. So far, it scratches the back of his teeth. Maybe that might happen. But it didn't, did it? To the extent that my nerves got the better of me on the day of the talent show, that I didn't even bring in my guitar. I pretended I forgot it at home. But of course, they had a spare one just knocking around the fucking yacht club. Long story short, I get up on stage and I decide to play Van Halen Ain't Talking About Love. For those of you unfamiliar, Van Halen were a phenomenal rock band back in the 80s. Eddie Van Halen is potentially one of the greatest guitarists of all time. I didn't think, in hindsight, I don't think a lot of the 11 to 14 year olds in the miners' sailing camp in the Royal Irish Yacht Club in Dunleary were exactly au fait with Eddie's ability to shred. So I get up on stage and I plug in my electric guitar and I open up with Ain't Talking About Love. And literally there was, to say there's radio silence is an insult to silence. There was death-like silence. There was just... And then eventually, the one noise that you never want to hear whenever you're performing in front of other people, there's just a gap. And then you just hear... And everybody started laughing. And I got off stage and I was real red. And I pretend to go to the toilet and I just left. And I texted my mum, was like, will you please collect me? Please, please collect me. It was the worst thing in the world. And that was the end of my sailing career. I've never been on the water since. Well, actually, I did get the ferry back from London like 5 years in a row. I pretended to have a fear of flying, but it was actually just because I wasn't making enough money to afford the flights. Yeah, and the ferry was only 40 quid return, so I used to do that. That was the end of my sailing career. Then I joined a rugby camp. That was a disaster. This is the worst thing about joining a rugby camp, because I was terrible at rugby, right? But in an effort to sort of combat how bad I was at rugby, I thought maybe if I go to a rugby camp in the summer, I'll come back and then I'll be able to join the team. But what happened was I went to the rugby camp and all of the guys who were on the team in school were also going to the rugby camp. So it was a complete disaster. It was akin to a kid getting kidnapped, okay? But only to manage to flee his captors for a few minutes, find a policeman, grab the policeman, tell the policeman what's happened, and then for the policeman to look down at you and peel off his mask to reveal that he is actually the kidnapper himself. That's akin to me going to a rugby sports camp and discovering that was filled with the very jocks I was trying to escape from in the first place. It only went worse for one other guy. There was another guy from my year who went to this rugby camp who came to Stradbroke Rugby Club wearing denim jeans and Birkenstocks. So it was never going to end well. The guy looked like he was in Berlin on Erasmus. He didn't belong there. He didn't belong there. Now, look, I certainly didn't belong there either, but at least my deep, deep, burning desire to be accepted was strong enough for me to sort of fall in line and act the proverbial lad. The guy showed up to a rugby camp looking like he was about to invent a machine that would inevitably shrink his kids. Do you know what I mean? He was wearing a shirt and tie that definitely came in a packet, and they were tucked so far down into his jeans, they probably kept his knees warm. The only person I've ever seen in my life wearing one of those radio hats, non-ironically, and it was a disaster. It was a complete bloodbath. On the very first day, they played this game called German Bulldogs. Don't know if anyone's familiar with it. It just involves tackling people, and usually the nerds and the outcasts and the misfits, or the misfat, which they used to call me. Nevertheless, this poor guy, Jamie, got so badly tackled, and then there was a pile-on wherein all the lads just jump on top of him. The only way the coaches could identify him under this dense pile of teenage boys was by the flickering lights of his CK runners. Disastrous. Then I tried out soccer camp. That was even worse again. Oh, you should go to Samba soccer camp. Everybody went to these camps because the promise was that there was going to be a celebrity, a famous like Brazilian or Italian footballer at the end of the course that would come and you could get his autograph. The week we went, it was like Keith Irwin, Dennis Irwin's first cousin, who works as a window cleaner in Ross Carberry and recently lost $4,000 on a racehorse named Holy Cow because he thought the name was funny. They were a complete swizz, those summer camps. You'd be like, oh, hi, sorry, so I'm going to do the course the third week in July. Oh, yeah, yeah, well, Jesus, last week we had Roberto Carlos, so you just missed him. And who's coming next week? Next week it's Nuno Gomes from Portugal. Oh, class, Jesus. And who do we have this week? Oh, this week it's Martin Costigan, the disgraced ex-groundskeeper of the school whose grounds we rent the pitches from. Sure, he smokes 40 cigarettes a day and shows the odd student his flaccid member, but he's a solid member of the football community. And he once had a pint with Johnny Giles in the airport. Did you ever hear that? Oh, yeah, I had a pint with him. Did you, though? Did you really have a pint with him? Or were you both just in the same place at the same time having pints? You can't say that you had pints with somebody just because you were in the same place. It's not fair. It reminds me of myself when I was living in London. I became a member of Soho House, right? And a lot of celebrities are a member of that place. Guilty. And as a result, I used to conflate the success of other people that I would see in there with my own lack of success. So, like, I convinced myself that my life was going well. Look, sure enough, fair enough, I might be having 9 pints on a Tuesday evening, but Robert Pattinson just came in with a leggy blonde. We're all part of the same club, you know? No, you're not, Mark. Robert Pattinson just made £11 million on his last movie and did a very convincing turn as a desperate drug addict in the Safdie Brothers film Good Time. You recently got a payday loan from Wonga.com so you can afford more nights out and sign up to next year's sailing summer camp. You're in bits, brother.